Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, do you ever just stop and think for a few moments? I imagine you do. We all do. Stop and think about your thinking. And stop and think about your being.
Meta-thinking?
Yeah, a bit. You know, you're sitting there. Maybe you're just doing something you do every day. You're almost on autopilot. And then you stop and you think, and it's like, and you realize, I'm this individual in this hominid species that's evolved to this state where I'm standing here in this artificial structure that other people built for me, other people designed for me, standing on the backbones of other designers. I'm wearing clothes for some reason, and I'm loading a dishwasher, and I'm thinking about my thoughts.
Yes. I mean, how you could not work on this podcast and not have this sort of self-awareness to that degree, I have to say, because of everything that we are researching. Sometimes it is a matter of just being really overly aware of your conscious and what you're doing, and wondering if the thing that you're doing at that very moment is even something that is free will.
Yeah.
Or you're doing it because you're subconsciously colored by some other experience. So, yes. And I think it's fascinating, this idea of consciousness, because as David Eagleman says, we're the only species that takes our own operating system and then sort of looks at it. Like the operating system comes up and sort of looks at the screen and says, what are you? What am I?
Yeah.
So what we're talking about, when we're talking about the operating system in the screen, we're obviously talking about this mind-brain problem.
Yes. Yeah. The mind-brain problem, the mind-body problem. Though I feel like mind-brain problem is more of an accurate description. Because what we're talking about here is, of course, that inside of this squishy meat body, we have this physical brain, this brain that is a part of our body, all right? And out of this brain manifests the mind. The mind, of course, is our thoughts, the things that happen to us every day, our wanting to do something, our experience of doing something, our wishing we had not done something, all of these things that come together into this storm of consciousness.
Yeah, because on the one hand, you have this very concrete 3 pounds of gelatinous goo stuff, right?
Yeah. Christoph Koch, the neuroscientist, calls it the most complex object in the known universe.
Right, because it's composed of roughly 100 billion neurons that each electrically spike in response to outside stimuli. So you have all this going on, mm-hmm. but then you have the concept of mind or the concept of self or self-awareness, that you know that all these things are going on outside of you and inside of you.
Yes.
So one is not the other, but certainly one arises from the other.
Yeah. We continue to study the brain nonstop. We continue to study the mind. Psychologists are working. Neuroscientists are working. Philosophers are working. Theologians are working. In our own part and our own individual work, we are struggling to sort of figure it all out. But we just continue to wrangle and fail to comprehend the psychophysical nexus between the two. And this is where we get into the mind-body problem. We work towards the answer, but we can't grasp it. Not yet.
And why is it important? Because to me, it is the holy grail of our existence. If we could find the center of consciousness, if we could pinpoint it, then we could somehow, we think, explain how it is that we came to be here, perhaps, what it all means. It sort of opens up, this one door opens up portals to many other doors of our existence.
Yeah, I mean, our consciousness is our experience of the world. It's our experience. It is us. So in a sense, it's figuring out what we are, really, on a deeper level than pure organism. It's easy. This is a question that trails off at all the ends into various less scientific fields as well. I mean, it's easy to spill over. Because again, it's the subject of not only neuroscience and of psychology. It's also the stuff of philosophy and theology. It's stuff that we've wrangled with since our ability to question what consciousness is and to grasp some notion, or at least grasp after the question of consciousness.
Okay, so before we do sort of an overview of various philosophies behind consciousness or ideas about consciousness, let's talk about something called the mirror test, which you actually have a video on right now.
Yes, which oddly enough does not feature a mirror. So we're always trying to figure out what consciousness is, obviously, and one of the hallmarks of consciousness, one of the things that we can say, yes, this is definitely on the list mm-hmm. when we try and figure out the attributes of human consciousness, self-awareness. Because again, I look at the ideas, I look in a mirror, and what do I see? I say, hey, that's me. Who's that handsome devil? Or who's that weirdo with ketchup on his face? You know, we see that that's us, and it, at the very least, it makes us think about ourselves.
Right. So you have this mirror test, which is, again, a measure of self-awareness. This was developed by Gordon Gallup Jr. in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And he used it to ascertain consciousness in animals, as well as identify when children were entering into the mirror stage of self-awareness. So the idea is you put a mark on an animal.
Yeah. On the face, somewhere where they can't see it without a mirror.
Yeah.
And they also can't feel it. So
right.
you couldn't just stab them with something because they're going to feel that.
Right. So you'd have to use a little subterfuge here, right?
Yes.
So presumably they look into the mirror before the mark is on them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they have the mark on them. They turn and they look, and it's then observed whether or not the animal is reacting in a manner consistent with being aware that the mark is located on their body. Are they turning around to get a better angle on mm-hmm. it? Are they seeing that something is awry or amiss? So animals that have passed the mirror test, we're talking about chimpanzees, bonobos, orangutans, dolphins, elephants, and possibly even pigeons.
European magpies on the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, of course, we've had extensive conversations about personhood, so we won't go into that. If you're interested in learning more about that, definitely check that out. But there's this idea that consciousness exists not just in humans, but in other species, and it complicates things in a way.
Yeah, one of the ones that I keep coming back to is the octopi, mm-hmm. which if you give an octopus a straight-up mirror test, they're going to fail it because their brains have evolved almost entirely separately from mammalian brains.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not as clued into these visual understanding of the world around them. They can reference a mirror, but they don't see it as themselves. But then there are a number of other tests that you can give an octopus and stuff like tool use and learning and some other attributes begin to line up to really make an argument for octopus consciousness. So it, like a lot of this stuff, it comes down to how are you going to measure it? How are you going to, and then how are you going to judge the measurement?
Well, I mean, the same thing with gorillas. They tend to not look at each other in the eyes or themselves in a mirror mm-hmm. in the eyes because it's a sign of aggressiveness. So they fail the test.
Yeah.
Even though they probably have a conscious, right? Or a self-awareness. So you're right. It's not a foolproof way to say definitively, this is what consciousness is, at least in this one aspect, and the following species have it. So we thought it would be interesting to look at a couple of brain mapping projects in the context of this conversation, because the brain mapping projects, which we've talked about before, like the Blue Brain Project, this is this idea that you could reverse engineer the human brain and you could begin to see all these processes happening inside of it. And, you know, much like some of the fMRI technology that we talked about mm-hmm. in terms of crime and, you know, trying to figure out whether or not someone had committed a crime based on what was going on in their hippocampus, in their memory, the same thing could happen in a sense where you could begin to understand the mysteries of the human brain, this idea of consciousness. Like maybe this would manifest itself in these projects. So we're talking about the Human Brain Project, and this is an attempt to construct a massive computer simulation of the brain. This is a European initiative, and Henry Markram is the coordinator of this. He's also the Blue Brain guy.
Yes.
And then there's also this brain activity map project, and this is a decade-long scientific effort to examine the workings of the human brain. This is what Obama, back in, I think, April, announced something like a $3 billion mm-hmm. Budget against that. And so that is this idea that you can build a comprehensive map of its activity and try to do the same thing for the brain that was done for the Human Genome Project. So we'll talk more about that later, but we are so interested in the brain, how it works, and again, these mysteries that are wrapped up in it, including consciousness, mm-hmm. that we can't help but to try to decode it.
All right. So let's back up just a little bit, you know, just a few centuries or so, and talk about some various philosophical ideas about what consciousness is and how we're supposed to deal with the mind-body problem. And it's worth noting that so many of the philosophers we're going to point out here, they weren't only philosophers. They were also sometimes mathematicians, biologists, just general men of science. And then part of the questing after these answers involved a multidisciplinary approach. And these were, I should also mention that these particular examples were brought up by philosopher Colin McGinn at this year's World Science Festival in The Whispering Mind, The Enduring Conundrum of Consciousness. And we're going to talk about McGinn himself in a bit as well. So let's go back to the days of René Descartes. That's 1596. I think, therefore, I am. He was a dualist. He saw the mind and body as separate. He said the essence of mind is thought, and body is an extension of it. Thoughts are not extended in space, but the body is. There was Leibniz, born in 1646. He made this analogy of the mill, okay? If you walked through the meat of the brain, or more likely, I guess, just pawed your hand around in it, you wouldn't see thoughts. You'd only see electrochemical mechanisms. So he stated that the mind exists invisible, but there's harmony between mind and body. Then you had Thomas Huxley, born in 1825, and he compared the conscious mind and the physical brain to a genie and a lamp. You rub the lamp, in this case, the physical brain, and out of it manifests this ephemeral genie, this consciousness. Okay, and so the argument that he's making here is that that we just cannot equate the two, because here we just have irritating nervous tissue, and here we have the wonders of human consciousness. And Huxley was an epiphenomenalist. So he was a dualist, but he saw the mind as kind of a byproduct of the brain, not necessary to the day-to-day operations, but kind of a shadow cast by this organ, which I think is very interesting when we think back to some of what we've done about free will and about mm-hmm. subconscious activities in the brain, and this idea that our experience of thought and even body is kind of what happens above the surface of a dark sea. And there's a lot that goes on underneath the waves that we're not privy to, but that's where most of the sausage is being made. Then there's Arthur Eddington, born in 1882, and he argued that consciousness is not sharply defined but fades into subconsciousness. And then you have some contemporary philosophers worth mentioning. Saul Kripke, he said that mind and brain are not identical, and you can just look at pain. If we look at pain as it's experienced in the brain via scans and neural activity, it's rather different from the way we experience it. So we have problems when we start trying to rate pain, like what is a level 7 pain. And there's some efforts right now to try and do just this, but it's not as simple as just saying, what did that hurt? How much did that hurt? Was that a 5 or a 6? And expecting that to pan out among everyone's experience. It's the subjective nature of consciousness. And then you had Nagel, who said that consciousness cannot be reduced to the brain. And then finally, Colin McGinn, the new Mysterianism guy, and we're going to talk about him in a bit.
Well, you know what? There's also this idea that different day, different brain, right? I mean, that there is not this illusion that we have a stasis in both our concept of ourselves, our self-awareness in the world. This changes from day to day based on our experiences.
Yeah.
Not to mention chemical changes in the brain.
Yeah, our mind changes constantly. We're not the same person we were a year ago, 5 years ago. We're not necessarily the same person we were yesterday. And the brain changes as well. A lot of the dualist arguments are that the mind and brain are separate entities, but that they are, that the mind can change the brain and the brain can change the mind. I tend to really like that, like the idea of the mind as the shadow cast by the brain. That one seems to resonate more with my own personal experience.
Well, especially when you look at something like the placebo effect. We've talked about this before, mm-hmm. about how someone can take the side effects, and they can take the placebo drug and consider those side effects, right? The ramifications, their self-awareness, how they're going to operate in the world with this knowledge that they could fall asleep at the wheel or get hives or whatever other side effect available to them, and then it manifests in them physically. So here you have the brain and the mind acting on each other.
And it really does blow the mind when you start thinking about it.
Because
you can see where the problem of rectifying these two things really grows and just becomes increasingly difficult to wrap your mind around.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we can begin at the beginning. When do we become truly conscious?
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astaproallergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
All right, we're back, and we are going to talk about the darkness that comes before consciousness, right?
Yeah.
Specifically in the womb. Neuroscientist Christoph Koch, or Koch, I believe.
Yes, yeah. And he was on this panel at World Science, and he's quite the firebrand.
He is. Yeah. He is so much fun to listen to and to watch, actually. He is writing for Scientific American as well, and in the article, When Does Consciousness Arise in Human Babies, he talks about something called the thalamocortical complex, and he says this provides consciousness with its highly elaborate content. And it begins to be put into place between the 24th and the 28th week of gestation, okay, within the womb. And then he goes on to say that a lot of the circuit elements necessary for consciousness are in place by the third trimester. But, he says, because there's this idea, well, you know, could a fetus be conscious? Could it have some sort of awareness? He says that the fetus is suspended in a warm and dark cave connected to the placenta that pumps blood, nutrients, and hormones into its growing body and brain. The fetus is asleep. So it's a very interesting article. I encourage everybody to check it out. But I just wanted to highlight a couple points from it. He goes on to detail the various ways in which the fetus essentially is sedated within the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, the dramatic events attending delivery by natural vaginal means cause the brain of the fetus to abruptly wake up. The release from anesthesia and sedation that occurs when the fetus disconnects from the maternal placenta arouses the baby so that it can deal with its new circumstances. It draws its first breath, wakes up, and begins to experience life.
Yeah, and it's pretty much the biggest wake-up of all time. Like, it's really difficult to even try and, like, put it in, like, adult human terms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the closest thing I can think of is my mind goes back to some of the recent experiments with psilocybin that have been conducted where mm-hmm. they're injecting individuals with psilocybin. So there's, like, this blast-off moment where they're just suddenly experiencing intense psychedelic experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that has got to be at least similar to what's going on here, because they're just going from 0 to 100, just like that. Suddenly they are sensing the world. They are, in a limited sense, seeing the world, and everything's just coming at them. They're unhooked from this, life support system that has previously sustained them.
You know, I couldn't help but think about The Matrix.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, when they're waking up out of that tank, right, and ripping things out of Keanu Reeves' neck.
Right, because otherwise they were just sitting there in that sort of sedative state, providing energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I did think it was interesting, though, that he talks about this, that Koch talks about this emergence into life and all the stimuli. And I couldn't help but be reminded of cognitive psychologist Alison Gopnik, and when she talks about the baby's brain being completely soaked in neurotransmitters,
mm-hmm.
because everything matters. You know, they don't have a neural pruning yet, and so they're differently conscious from adults. And she makes the argument that they are much more conscious than adults, which really kind of puts a whole tailspin on this idea mm-hmm. of consciousness and self-awareness. Of course,
because if you give them the test, the mirror test, it's 8 months before, generally, more or less 8 months before they're going to pass that thing.
Right. They'll be interested in their mm-hmm. image, but they won't necessarily know that that's them staring back at them. We think, right?
Yeah. Because earlier than that, though, the ceiling fan is a big hit. I've been hanging out with some babies yeah. recently, and the ceiling fan is apparently just amazing. It's like watching, it's like the adult version of watching Baraka on an HD screen with Blu-ray. It's just watching that ceiling fan go around and around.
You know, my daughter, when she was an infant, was so interested in these trees. I don't know that they're crepe myrtles, but you know, they're very vertical trees mm-hmm. outside of our window. And so when I would feed her, she would just be absolutely engaged in this. And then mm-hmm. I learned later that the neurons that we have in our visual cortex are much more dedicated to the XY plane than diagonal. So it makes sense that these really strong verticals appeal to children. But anyway, this is a side note to consciousness here.
Now, you were talking about the infant in the womb being asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that instantly makes you think, well, what are they dreaming about? Probably nothing, because one of the studies we were looking at, American psychologist David Folks studied the dreaming and cognitive development in preschoolers. And he believes preschoolers' dreams are generally static and plain, with no characters that move and act, and hardly any feelings or and no memories. Because what's to be processed? I mean, not to turn this into a dream podcast, but
yeah,
the dream is a byproduct of cognition and then to look at a preschooler's dreams, and there's like nothing going on. There's just not enough material to process.
But there is stimuli to be processed. There is cognition mm-hmm. in the womb because you have auditory stimuli, and you do have light, right?
Yeah.
I guess you could, to a degree, say there's taste as well, because you have some of the molecules of taste crossing over in the placenta. But anyway, the point is that there's no context for it, right?
Right. All right, so back from dreams in the womb, back from the explosive psychedelic experience of birth, talking more about the problem of consciousness. Now, you can really divide consciousness problems up into the easy problems of consciousness and then the really hard problem of consciousness. Now, if I may, I'll just run through the easy problems of consciousness for us real quick. The ability to discriminate, categorize, and react to environmental stimuli. All right. We can do that. Mm-hmm. I can do that. I just did it now. The integration of information by a cognitive system. I've got information coming me in from three different ways. Like an individual is telling me one thing, but their face is saying another. How am I supposed to interpret that into a general idea of what's going on? The reportability of mental states. You know, you can talk about how you feel and how you feel. The ability of a system to access its own internal states. I'm aware of how I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
The focus of attention. I can focus my attention on this, that, or the other, sometimes, given the right amounts of coffee. The deliberate control of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just a self-moving soul. I am, it's just caught in the river of actions. I can actually think about what I'm doing.
Like you're tamping down right now the fact that you really want to dance, right?
Yeah. But
what all that gesticulation is.
Right. And even though that's on the easy problems list, you have to admit that one really spills out into a whole issue of free will as well. But still.
Dancing, yeah.
No,
when a beat comes on, I can't help myself.
Well, in a way, you're right. To what extent can you disobey the beat? I don't know. But then the final one in the easy problems of consciousness, the difference between wakefulness and sleep. We've talked about this enough, so we're not going to dive back into that one. But obviously, being awake and being asleep are two different states, different types of consciousness and unconsciousness going on there, but being aware of the difference.
Yeah, my top is still spinning, so I think this is a dream. That was an Inception reference.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. So the really hard problem, right, and this is David J. Chalmers from the University of Arizona. He talks about this hard problem of being experience, right? Because
yes.
We think, we perceive, there is a whir of information processing, but there is a largely subjective aspect of this.
Yeah. My experience of the universe is not going to be like yours. And there are ways that we can compare those experiences, but we can't definitively really line them up one-to-one. And then when you start looking at other species, this is where you get into Nagel's work, which we've actually mentioned before in our episode on bats. He had that article, What Is It Like to Be a Bat? It's a huge argument in the whole problem of consciousness debate. For those of you who don't remember, his whole thing is that we can look at a bat, we can see how a bat's mind works, we form all these theories and create an understanding of how the bat experiences the world around it, but we can never really know what it's like to be a bat. We can never line up our experience of the world, our consciousness, with that bat level of consciousness.
Yeah, philosopher Bertrand Russell said this about 70 years ago or so. He said, we know nothing about the intrinsic quality of physical events except when these are mental events that we directly experience. Right? So we can look at the bat in all of its glory, but until we can, you know, physically embody this and mentally embody the bat, we don't know what the deal is with the bat.
Yeah, Nagel said, but fundamentally an organism has conscious mental states if and only if there is something that it is to be that organism, something it is like for the organism. So, head spinning even just reading that, you know.
Okay, so yeah, let's gather in all of these threads. What are we starting to, what sort of story are we starting to weave here? The limits of understanding.
Yes, limits. And that's where Colin McGinn comes back into it. British philosopher, he was on the panel at World Science, and he kept, him and Christoph Koch, they were the ones who really, they kept going at each other, in a fun way, in a very, academic debate kind of way, because both of them were rock solid on their views and their opinions of the world. One's a neuroscientist, one's a philosopher, and it was a fabulous interaction. You can catch that whole discussion online.
Is that the one where McGinn is trying to really pin down Koch on whether or not he's a reductionist, or, and like Koch is like, no, don't try to label me.
Yeah. And then he kept saying, I'm really surprised you're actually a dualist. And they kept kind of picking each other. It was wonderful to behold. And that's the great thing about the World Science Festivals. These panels will have people of different disciplines on there. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a panel of physicists talking about a topic or neuroscientists talking about a topic. There's a theologian, or in this case, a philosopher or two to spice things up. So Colin McGinn is the most prominent of the new Mysterians. The new Mysterian argument is essentially that the brain cannot conceive the natural coexistence of mind and brain. And it's not that we're really necessarily that we're dumb. It's not like that we're just too stupid for this, but we've only evolved to carry out certain cognitive feats. Okay. So we can navigate a changing world. We can do all of these things, that we mentioned in the easy problems of consciousness. You know, we can deal with all this sense data and make sense of it. But, what is the possible evolutionary advantage of gaining an advanced understanding of the nature of consciousness? Of, like, what is the evolutionary advantage to solving the mind-body problem? So he's saying this lines up really closely with the concept, the philosophical concept of cognitive closure, mm-hmm. That humans can only hope to understand certain aspects of the universe, and we simply lack the brains to understand everything.
So you and I were talking earlier, and I mentioned that perhaps, this is just me, you know, sitting here gobbledygooking, but perhaps
philosophizing. I think that's the word you're looking for.
No, I think gobbledygooking with a capital G. that perhaps the reason why we have these limits is we can't go beyond and really figure out what consciousness is and pin it down, is because it really is only helpful to us in the context of theory of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about theory of mind as this ability to not just occupy our own perspective, but to occupy other people's perspective.
Right. Like me trying to figure out how Julie thinks, or how Noel thinks, or how a bat thinks.
Yeah, you can't have one without the other. You have mm-hmm. to have a self-awareness in order to be aware of others. So from an evolutionary perspective, perhaps there are limits to that understanding. You know, perhaps there's this sort of line where it's like, okay, and now it's not useful to us anymore.
Yeah. It's one of those things that, on one level, it does, it rings kind of true to me, you know? I think it rings more and more true with our modern world, you know? Like, you go back, I love looking at the, like, retrofuturist stuff and looking at our ideas about what the future would be like, say, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, or mm-hmm. even the 80s. And now we're for the most part, we're a little more limited in what we dare to dream, for ourselves in the future. And a lot of that is realizing that there are limits. And if there are not hard and fast limits, then there are at least limitations on how quickly we can advance, and how quickly and to what extent we can will ourselves to move forward. So that lines up really closely with, I feel like, how we're experiencing the world and how it's matching mm-hmm. up with our dreams of where we would be. But then it's also something that Christoph Koch was very strongly opposed to the idea during the talk, and he said this is just a fetus, you know? And because it does go right, completely against the can-do attitude of science, the idea that, like, yes, we're going to study this, and we're going to, by God, figure it out. And then along comes the new Mysterion to say, there's some things we'll never figure out. Go home. You know?
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gaginianaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Okay, so which brings to this, to the table, this conversation about these brain projects, this reverse engineering of the brain. So if we're going to try to move forward with this and try to understand what the brain is, what the mind is, mm-hmm. and where consciousness ultimately sits in there, then, hey, can't we just throw a supercomputer at it, right?
This is an important topic to discuss, because cognitive closure, which I mentioned earlier, you know, the idea that we can only hope to understand so much. One of the things that stands outside of cognitive closure is the steady accumulation and preservation of scientific data over the course of human history.
Mm-hmm.
And in this, I love to get a little fantastic with my imaginings of this, but I tend to think of, like, science as this kind of super intellect that we're building outside of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's not limited by the capacity of a single human mind, or even a dozen human minds. It's not limited by the lifespan of an individual, or even the lifespans of whole cultures.
Mm-hmm.
It stands outside of that. It grows larger and larger. It's like the internet itself, and the internet is a part of it, and it's becoming this kind of super intellect.
So it's this collective data of both humans and machine.
Right.
Right.
And it's affected by our own cognitive closure, but it's not limited by cognitive closure.
So the idea is that you could get enough data here going, right? You could study the human brain. You could try to have the supercomputer take every data point it could and string together some sort of understanding of how the brain actually works.
Yes.
And I say actually because, honestly, we're at a point right now that neuroscience is still very like this is a very young field.
Yeah, I know every day, especially if you follow any science feeds out there, including our own, it's like there's always some sort of new exciting bit of neuroscience coming out. And we talk about a lot of them here. But and so it's easy to fall into the trap of thinking that we are much closer to a full understanding than we are.
Yeah. And so even if you could produce the data by the machines, in something we talked about earlier, it doesn't necessarily mean that our mind in its limited understanding could recognize the pattern that emerges.
Right. It's like we create this genie of science that stands outside of ourselves, and then it reaches the point where it can say, hey, I figured out that whole consciousness thing for you. Let me explain it to you. And then it explains it to us, and we still have the cognitive closure in place to where we still can't understand what the explanation is.
So I wanted to bring John Horgan into the conversation. He is a writer for Scientific American. He has a blog called Crosscheck. And he wouldn't, I don't think, paint himself as a new Mysterian. But
no.
He brings some very interesting arguments into the limits of our understanding vis-a-vis these brain projects.
Yes. And you mentioned Henry Markham earlier, the head guy at the Blue Brain Project. And Horgan was quite critical of this gentleman.
Yeah, he made the point of, well, Markham, actually, he read a couple of Horgan's blog posts. This is such, like, gossip, this science gossip.
Yeah, he responded in the comments, even.
He responded in the comments and basically saying, like, I think it was something like a lack of vision, basically, on Horgan's part.
Yeah.
And Horgan said, well, I'm going to take some of the comments that you made about another brain project.
Yeah, like a mouse brain project, I believe.
Yeah, and saying that it wasn't doable. And, you know, but now you're sort of heralding this brain project as being the end-all, be-all, the sort of, like, can we get to the unified theory of the brain? And so Horgan says, look, we, you know, neuroscientists can't mimic brains because they lack basic understanding of how the brains work or how the brain works. And they don't know what to include in the simulation and what to leave out. In other words, he's saying that the neural code that they're trying to figure out, they don't even have the basic understandings to figure out what that code might consist of. And so he's saying you can't say that this is an apples to apples thing when it comes to like the brain project or the human genome project, because he's saying that when the human genome project began, there was already a basic understanding of genetics and the genetic code had already been deciphered.
Mm-hmm.
So they could make some real progress. But he's saying, look, you have all sorts of factors here that affect the brain. You have neurotransmitters, hormones, neural growth factors, chemicals. He says that there are neurons that display a dizzying variety of forms and functions, and that researchers have discovered scores of distinct types of neurons just in the visual system. So he's basically saying, if we don't know all the components yet, well, we know the components, but we don't know necessarily how they operate, then how can you reverse engineer something like that?
Yeah, he made a fabulous comparison, Horgan did, comparing it to the cargo cults in the South Pacific, the Melanesian cults, where the idea, of course, is that they would see planes flying over during the Second World War, and they were inspired by them. You know, supposedly they thought they were, you know, these were holy, magical things, and so they created versions of them themselves. They created models out of straw materials and what have you around them, and they could create, of course, the form of an airplane, the shape of an airplane. Their understanding, their model of what an airplane is, but they couldn't take off in it. It didn't fly. The function of it was not present. So they could create a model, but not a working model. They could create a model based on their limited understanding of the thing.
Now, this is highly critical, right? But there is some, I think that there's some weight to what he is saying. It's like, you know, this could be premature in trying to do, and to reverse engineer the brain. And he brought up neuroscientist Donald Stein at Emory University in saying that they're completely ignoring multiple levels of the brain, and we're talking about the glial cells. Mm-hmm. And you and I talked about the glial cells at length when we were talking about what makes a genius, right? Because
The
more white matter, the more glial cells that you have.
It's a great word, too, just to say. It sounds like something the Nutty Professor would belt out.
Glial cells!
Yeah.
Is that, no?
Kind of.
But sort of this fiber optic system that can transport things really quickly. Like the more you have, the quicker you can think and the quicker you can put together ideas. So he's saying like this just is so nuanced, so complex. You know, how can you really get to where you need to go? And on top of that, there's the microbiome. And this is something we've talked about too. This is this idea that we are colonized by microbial cells, bacterial cells, and they are affecting our brain. And we talked about this in the podcast about the gut being the second brain, because those microbial cells can determine what sort of level of anxiety you're mm-hmm. experiencing, all sorts of mental states, and even your immune system, which can dictate, you know, neurological disorders. So it's just a...
Yeah, it brings us right back to the whole mind-body problem that we've talked, not the mind-body problem, but the mind-body connection, the whole centaur thing,
mm-hmm.
where we're not a rider on a horse, but we're a rider fused with horse. And so anytime you, if you really try to think of the brain cut off on its own, you're not getting the full picture of the organism. So, it, yeah, like you say, it just gets more and more complex the closer you look.
Yeah, and then sometimes I think the problem of consciousness is, again, it's subjective, and how do we all even define it for ourselves?
Yeah.
So even just pinning down exactly what that is, the hard problem, right?
Yeah.
The experience is sort of the first part of trying to figure it out, or reverse engineering consciousness.
Yeah, like are there truly varying levels of consciousness among humans? You know, because we, getting into the realm of theology and New Ageism and Buddhist philosophy, you get into the ideas that there are individuals at higher states of consciousness, you know, like someone who has achieved Buddhahood is at a different level of consciousness than just somebody that's completely lost in their thoughts. Someone who can say, hey, I'm feeling angry right now. Why am I feeling angry? Is at a different level of consciousness than someone that is simply angry.
Or someone who is dreaming and they're angry,
yes.
right? Because they're sort of in that womb sedative quality of being, right? So how aware can you be when you're dreaming?
Yeah. And is it possible for there to be some sort of a super consciousness as well?
And when will the internet become self-aware?
Exactly. When could the internet become this super consciousness? Again, this idea of we build all this science and then it eventually becomes the genie that we can ask this ever-towering question about the nature of consciousness. At what point does it become that living genie, that just powerful intellect that we can quiz about this stuff?
And at what point does it recognize that we can't even understand the data that it's giving us and say,
yeah.
oh, man,
so these maybe
guys.
It just placates us at that point and says, oh, well, I don't even know. I'm not even sure what the answer would be. Maybe they would just put us off. Be like, I'll tell you tomorrow.
Manana.
Yeah. Maybe the super intellect at this point, I mean, it essentially becomes God.
Okay, so if you're looking for a center, the seat of consciousness,
yes,
you could say that you're looking for a cohesive thing, being,
mm-hmm.
and that in some ways you're trying to cast off entropy and cling to this idea that there's some sort of stability, a.k.a. God, the center, right? So in some ways, I do think that this search for consciousness is a bit of a red herring, because these things, this is a construct, and it's not, it will always be abstract. You're not going to be able to find it in the concrete.
So there you have it, the quest to understand human consciousness. New Mysterianism. And I should point out that, you know, we're talking about like building an imperfect model of something, but obviously building imperfect models, that's on the road to figuring out how something works. So you look back through the history of science, and science is filled with imperfect understandings and imperfect models, but those lead to more perfected versions. Like science is often wrong, but science is not a solid state. Science is a movement towards understanding.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I am very excited by these brain
yes.
projects, and I would love to have, you know, be able to dump my brain into a machine and have like a nice little backup.
Yeah.
That would be great. I think that there's all sorts of really cool implications of this, but in the context of the hard problem and as starting point to try to figure out what we don't quite understand, you know, it's a valid conversation.
Yeah, and I also don't want to miscategorize Colin McGinn's New Mysterianism approach. He's not saying that we cannot understand this stuff. He's saying we should have our minds open to that possibility. All right, well, consciousness, it's the really the closest thing to us, and also the most mysterious. And, of course, someone could say, people have said the very same thing about God. So there you go, more connection between the quest for understanding consciousness and the quest to touch the face of God right there. So, since it's that close to everyone, I'm sure everyone has some thoughts on this particular topic, and we would love to hear them. Tell us how you perceive your own consciousness. How do you perceive consciousness around you? Do you buy into this new Mysterianism, or cognitive closure? Or do you really think we can do it? You think it's just a matter of time before we crack that nut? Or do we have to create the genie to crack it for us, and then we find it inedible anyway? Let us know. You can find us online in a number of different places. Of course, we're all over the social media. We're on Twitter. We're on, D Plus? We're on Tumblr. We're on Facebook. We're also on YouTube. That's where our videos are, at Mind Stuff Show on YouTube. And then also the mothership, the main website, stufftoblowyourmind.com.
And you can always drop us a line. Let us know your thoughts at blowthemind@discovery.com. For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.